This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. With the coronavirus cases already topping 5,800, President Donald Trump is asking Congress to help Americans through this financial storm. AP Washington correspondent Saga Mogani reports.
We're going big.
The president says it's nobody's fault. The virus is hitting the economy hard. And Treasury Chief Steven Mnuchin says the president wants to get cash to those affected.
We're looking at sending checks to Americans immediately.
In the next 2 weeks, there are few details, including how much money Congress would have to sign off as well. The administration's urging lawmakers to approve an $850 billion rescue package, bigger than the 2008 bank bailout or the 2009 Recovery Act. The White House says it hopes it can pass quickly, and Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell says his chamber should not adjourn until then, though it's a big undertaking for a slow-moving Congress. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden swept a convincing win over Senator Bernie Sanders in Tuesday's Democratic presidential primaries in Florida, Illinois, and Arizona. Biden thanked voters and election workers.
Americans in three states went to the polls today. I want to thank all the public officials and the poll workers who worked closely with the public health authorities to ensure safe opportunities for voting, to clean and disinfect voting booths, and to make sure the voters could cast their ballots while maintaining the distance from one another that was safe.
The victories placed Biden well ahead of Sanders in the race to clinch the party's nomination. The governor of the state of Ohio postponed Tuesday's primary because of the coronavirus outbreak. Ohio is now set to vote in June. For details on more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper said the Pentagon will provide millions of respirator masks and ventilators to federal health authorities to help in response to the coronavirus pandemic.
The Department of Defense will make available up to 5 million N95 respirator masks and other personal protective equipment from our own strategic reserves to the Department of Health and Human Services for distribution. The first 1 million masks will be made available immediately.
Esper said the ventilators are designed for use by troops in the military. We'll need to train civilians on how to use them. There are new limits being placed on key items as America navigates the spreading of the virus. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has that story.
Major retailers are trying to keep up with the demand for key supplies during the virus shutdown. Kroger says it's limiting certain items: cold and flu medicine, soap, cleaning products, water, and the oh-so-scarce toilet paper. Consumers are finding empty shelves where those essentials used to be, even prompting the president this week to urge shoppers to stop hoarding groceries and supplies. Amazon's making a change, telling some vendors not to bother shipping non-essentials like telephone cases. It's keeping warehouses cleared for toilet paper, hand sanitizer, and other items in high demand, like diapers, canned foods, and disinfecting wipes. Amazon's adding more workers, but warns deliveries will take longer than usual. I'm Jackie Quinn.
A migrant advocacy group is suing the Trump administration to stop three children from deportation to El Salvador, where the family says their lives would be in danger. VOA's Marissa Melton reports.
The three children are in a U.S. facility. Their mother is in a tent camp in Mexico, while their father lives in Maryland outside Washington, D.C., and says he is willing to bring his children into his home. Lawyers for the Coalition Action Justice Center say the children should be considered unaccompanied minors and deserve an asylum hearing. The lawyers say the children would be in grave danger if deported because their father ran a church in El Salvador where he preached against the violent MS-13 gang. The family fled El Salvador from Mexico. The father and a fourth child entered the U.S. last June and were allowed to stay. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Volkswagen says it will close most of its European plants for 2 weeks due to the uncertainty about the demands for cars and the supplies of parts amid the virus outbreak. For details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Carter in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's president says he does not agree with the electoral reform bills passed by the parliament.
What this means now is that the president will need to communicate the decision that he has made to parliament, and that parliament will need to reconvene and actually discuss the justifications that the president has made.
Makumbo Mutale is the Malawi governor's commentator. Uganda's Speaker of Parliament sparks controversy about a cure for the coronavirus. Kenya's Clinical Officers Union wants more staff to manage the coronavirus pandemic. And the Liberian government says its second Liberian has tested positive for the coronavirus.
The contact came from one of the direct contact. The immediate contact of the confirmed case was tested, and that's how come he was positive.
Wilhelmina Gala is Liberia's health minister, and Zimbabwe's annual inflation rate has more than doubled. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Peter Mutharika says he does not agree with the electoral reform bills passed by the parliament in February this year. The parliament had set May 19 this year to hold fresh presidential elections after the constitutional court in February this year annulled the May 2019 presidential election because of irregularities. Presidential spokesperson Ngemi Kalilani told a news conference on Tuesday that the parliamentary bills conflict with the constitution. Meanwhile, President Peter Mutharika on Tuesday announced the removal of General Vincent Nundwe as commander of the Malawi Defense Force without explanation.
The president's spokesperson, Kalidan, basically wanted to brief the nation around the status of the bills that parliament had passed and were sent to the president for him to assent, as well as the recommendations that parliament had made to the president on the firing of the chairperson of Malawi Electoral Commission, as well as the commissioners of Malawi Electoral Commission. So basically the whole conference was basically aimed at updating the public on that.
The Malawi parliament passed bills calling for elections reform, which meant replacing the current commissioners, including the chairperson, Justice G. Ansa. What happens now?
So what Kalidan indicated is that the president has refused to act on the recommendation that he should fire the commissioners as well as the chairperson of Malawi Electoral Commission. So what this means now is that the president will need to communicate the decision that he has made actually to parliament, and that parliament will need to reconvene and actually discuss the justifications that the president has given. Because according to Kalidan, the justification that the president has given is that parliament did not have the mandate actually to, that the parliamentary committee did not have mandate to question the credibility of this election when they were beneficiary of the same election which was administered by the Malawi Electoral Commission. And then there was also an issue to do with that the commissioners were ambushed and that they did not have legal representation when attending these meetings by the public appointment committee of parliament.
Has there been any reaction from the opposition, say, to the president? Spokesperson's news conference.
So far, there is no official reaction from the opposition. But then I think some members of the opposition have been just reacting maybe on social media in their personal capacity. But we're yet to have an official reaction. But definitely, the reaction will be in the negative, mindful of the fact that the opposition, that actually the majority of the opposition had actually voted, voted that passed these bills in parliament. So we should really expect some negative reaction from the opposition.
What can you tell us about the removal of General Vincent Nundwe as the commander of the Malawi Defense Force?
Yes, so the president has exercised the powers that he has by actually removing Vincent Nundwe as the commander of the Malawi Defense Force. And I think and he has been actually replaced just today. The reasons, basically, there have been technical reasons that they have been given, but I think what is very clear is that the reasons behind his removal is largely to do with the role that he had played as a commander-in-chief the last 8 months. As you're aware, the last 8 months we had nationwide demonstrations, and during these demonstrations, the Malawi Defense Force arose to the occasion to protect the protesters by ensuring that the protesters are well protected and that there is no force that is used, which was a bit contrary to what the president had been preaching during the political rally, urging the police, urging the army to use force in order to keep the protesters.
Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governance commentator. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Uganda's Speaker of Parliament has sparked controversy with the claim that a local pharmaceutical company is about to manufacture an alleged cure for the coronavirus. On Tuesday, Uganda's health minister warned against spreading false information about the pandemic. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
While addressing lawmakers Monday, Ugandan Speaker of Parliament Rebecca Kadaga said that a local pharmaceutical company will start producing a cure for the coronavirus in 2 weeks' time. Her statement came after a meeting with Professor Sarfaraz Niazi, a scientist from the University of Illinois in the United States, and the proprietors of Day Biopharma Uganda Limited.
A professor who manufactured a treatment for coronavirus in the U.S. and he has granted the patent to Uganda. And within a fortnight, the treatment will be made here. It will be available on the market here in Uganda. It's being made by a company called Day International. Not that we should be relaxed, but there is hope.
The speaker was not the only one who got excited. Mathias Magola, a biochemist working for the pharmaceutical company, and Niazi also met Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and seemed to convince him that the product would kill not just COVID-19, but any virus.
It's only this product in the world that kills the virus, including SARS.
So under the economics, I think it would be that because this coronavirus will be over, the epidemic will be over. But then there will be other viruses, so that chemicals will be able to kill the others.
Including bacteria?
Yes, because if you only make it for the corona, then what happens when...
When the corona is gone.
So, but if it can kill others...
No, it can kill all viruses.
However, when asked if this is true, Ugandan Minister of Health, Dr. Ruth Acheng, who has been working closely with the World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control, warned this is false information. Acheng said research on COVID-19 is still ongoing, and she noted the WHO has yet to endorse any treatment for the coronavirus.
There is no research that has been approved by WHO clearly saying let the countries implement this. And so until WHO has said this is the way to go, we still know that the treatment for COVID is supportive treatment, lots of fluids, and analgesics for those who are in pain. For those who are in the hospitals with a severe form, we want to rehydrate them, give them oxygen where it is necessary, and treat pneumonia where there is pneumonia.
Acheng also encouraged Ugandans to continue washing their hands with soap and water or hand sanitizers to prevent the spread of the virus. The best measure for preventing COVID-19, doctors say, is for everyone in affected countries to stay put, limit physical contact, and wait for the virus to stop spreading. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The Kenya Union of Clinical Officers have asked the government to employ more clinical officers to manage the coronavirus pandemic. Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Tuesday, Union Chairperson Peter C. Wachira expressed concerns about a clinical officer's handling suspected coronavirus cases. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya has already recorded its fourth case of the virus.
Addressing the media in Nairobi, the Kenya Union of Clinical Officers has expressed fears of their members being infected while attending to the affected patients. The union's chairperson, Peterson Wachira, said that more medical officers are needed to attend to the patients and manage the spreading of coronavirus that has increased the affected number in Kenya from 3 to 4.
The reason as to why we are saying we need more medics and we need medics trained, that health workers feel confident in the protective measures they have, because they'll be the ones to give this civic education and even to manage this case. And that is why we are saying it's not a time for us to shift blame. It's not a time for accusations and counter-accusations. It's time that we come together as a country, and that is why as a union, we have decided that we are going to work with government to ensure that we bring out the gaps.
Lack of enough personnel and equipment in most health facilities across the country might be a hindrance in fighting coronavirus pandemic in Kenya. Mr. Washira says the health workers should be provided with accommodation to limit the spread of the virus to their family members.
For health workers, because sometimes they also get infected in the process. Number one, as a country, we have a shortage. Number two, some may be infected depending on how the spread of the virus goes, and we may need to quarantine them. So we need more than enough health workers, so that if there will be need to quarantine some, then we will have enough to continue seeing patients. We are asking the government to provide accommodation facilities so that whoever is working in isolation can actually remain there.
Kenya has conducted 111 tests since the country started running the COVID-19 tests early this month, and a total of 71 cases were negative. 36 people are under observation and 4 already tested positive for the virus. Speaking yesterday Tuesday at State House Nairobi, President Uhuru Kenyatta has declared Saturday 21st a national prayer day for the country.
We acknowledge always that we are nothing without our God. And we have learned over time that turning to God in such times gives us not only comfort, but also hope and strength to overcome even those challenges. I have decided to declare this coming Saturday as a national day for prayer. On that day, through our religious leaders, we will be asking God for his forgiveness, anything that we may have done wrong or wronged. On that day, we shall together ask for his protection and blessing for our nation, for our people, for the world, and all global citizens.
Kenya's health minister says all travelers into Kenya, including citizens, diplomats, residents, and United Nations staff, will swear a legal document that they will observe quarantine rules. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 18th. The Liberian government says a second person has tested positive for the coronavirus disease. The new case is a domestic worker in the home of the official who tested positive for the disease on Monday this week. The health ministry says the second case was a primary contact of the official when he returned to his residence from Switzerland. Health Minister Wilhelmina Jala tells VOA Liberia is currently on a robust contact tracing of all those who might have come into contact with the affected persons.
Since we were able to gather the contacts very quickly and we tested one of the contacts, then that became positive and that added the number within 24 hours.
Did the contact come from your primary patient?
The contact came from one of the direct contacts. The immediate contact of the confirmed case was tested, and that's how come he was positive.
You've been looking at the many tests of the airport. How many people can we confirm did touch down via Brussels in Liberia on Friday?
Usually Brussels run between 200 and 200. So he was in a business class, so we're able to, based on the manifest, identify those people that sat according to the WHO regulation directly behind or to the side.
How many of them can we say?
We only were able to identify 3 on our manifest that got down, him and 2 other passengers that got down in Liberia.
Do you already have them in quarantine, or you've done some observation on them?
We are currently locating them. We have their addresses and we have sent people to kind of identify where they are.
Madam Minister, let's look at Liberia's preparedness for this coronavirus.
In terms of contact tracing and surveillance, I think we are doing a good job. At least as soon as we found out, we were able to round up most of the suspected cases or the contacts were able to do that very quickly. So for that, I would say we are quite prepared. In terms of big equipment like ventilators and other things, we don't have. So we are currently in contact with a lot of partners who are willing to make sure that all of these things are on the ground. Luckily for us, the first patient is very stable, but we have some ventilators in the country that we can move. We have oxygen, we have some pulse oximeters, and we have some other things that we can use initially here on the ground.
The issue of testing kits, is Liberia ready?
In terms of doing the confirmation tests, we have tests to do a lot of testing right now. We're expecting some more within a few days. We're even expecting the rapid tests, so we'll be able to do rapid. Right now, we cannot do the rapid tests, but within a week, we'll be able to do rapid tests. So test kits are coming. Maybe the last information I got was April 1st. We are going to get some of the rapid tests in the country.
What went wrong when Ebola broke out in Liberia? What went right when you kind of solved the problem? And what is going right with this outbreak?
Ebola, it took us a while to really start on the track to tracking everything down. So it took a long time and a lot of cases happened. But when people got it, it quickly went down. And the Ebola, it was a condition of touch, which is different from this. So in the case of Ebola, the Ebola were coming to look for you. If you touch somebody, you will get it. But in the case of corona, it's in the air. So it's not a matter of you finding it. It will find you. This is the reason why we had to be vigilant in terms of finding contacts. We don't want people to run away, because running away is not going to help. We try by all means possible to no longer say who the person is in terms of calling name, because it makes people afraid and people try to run away.
Gambian government, in collaboration with the Medical Research Council, has announced its first case of the coronavirus. Health Minister Amadou Lamin Samatta made the announcement shortly after President Adamawa Barrow addressed the nation on the coronavirus pandemic. Pandero Mbaye reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The West African nation of the Gambia has registered its first case of coronavirus. The COVID-19 case was discovered by the United Kingdom-based Medical Research Council, MRC. Dr. Amadou Lamin Samatta is Gambia's health minister.
This particular confirmed case is a lady in her 20s who returned from the UK on Sunday through the Banjul International Airport. A day after arrival, she started to have fever and decided to self-isolate at home. She reported to the MRC under isolation and was tested and found to be positive.
Samatta says passengers who flew with the patient would be located and quarantined.
The Minister of Health, in collaboration with the Medical Research Council, have started the process of contact tracing and will endeavor to reach all contacts, especially those in the same flight.
Samatta's statement followed a state address made by President Barrow, who briefed the nation on his government's plans to combat the corona pandemic.
It is in this light that all non-essential travels by government officials, including ministers, permanent secretaries, managing directors and directors of all ministries, departments and agents have been suspended. Also, realizing how vulnerable people are during public gatherings, I hereby declare that all public gatherings are suspended henceforth.
Oseanu Dabo is the leader of the United Democratic Party. Dabo addressed a news conference on Tuesday. He says the fight against corona, COVID-19, should not be left in the hands of the government alone.
Of course, we are faced with the ugly and frightening prospect of the coronavirus affecting the Gambia. Because of this, it behoves all of us to stand by and support the government of the Gambia in its efforts to contain this pandemic.
The pandemic was first discovered in China. It later spread around the world. Gambia's neighboring country, Senegal, is among the African countries affected by COVID-19. Dozens of coronavirus cases have been reported in the French-speaking nation. The UDP leader is concerned about the economic ramifications associated with the coronavirus.
The consequences of this global pandemic is more than just a public health crisis. It has affected every sector of the world's economy.
Dabo says Gambia's economy wouldn't be able to withstand such a pandemic.
The UDP encouraged the government to implement policies and measures to adequately prepare for the economic consequences of the pandemic.
The UDP leader also raised the need for the Gambian government to protect its borders with Senegal. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Zimbabwe's annual inflation rate has more than doubled, according to the latest figures. The rate has been released for the first time in 9 months after the Zimbabwe government controversially suspended the publication of the data. Ade Gondo has more.
The Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency, ZIMSTAT, this week said the country's year-on-year inflation rate for the month of February, as measured by the All Items Consumer Price Index, stood at 540%. The last time the annual inflation rate was reported in June 2019, it stood at 176%. According to ZIMSTAT, the month-on-month inflation rate in February was 13.5%, up sharply from the January figure of just over 2%. The soaring inflation compounds the economic quagmire the country has been in, just as it confronts the risk of the COVID-19 virus. More than a year of hyperinflation has eroded household income. Most Zimbabweans eke out livings based on the local currency, known as the RTG, which is fast losing value. The US dollar currently trades at around 40 RTGs, up from 36 last week on the parallel market. Retailers and service businesses have had to raise their prices. On the streets of Bulawayo, Zimbabwe's second largest city, citizens feel the pain of inflation. Rosa Moyo is a receptionist and a 30-year-old mother of one.
It's tough now because when we considering everyone who's employed, like myself, I've got a kid, I need to buy things for my kid, like diapers. I need to import, I need to buy from South Africa, and I need to buy in rent. The cost of living is really hectic. We can't afford. Maybe I think we should do away with the bond issue and try to adopt some other currency.
The city of Bulawayo recently raised the hikes and service fees by 400%, arguing the local government is financially sinking. Many residents say a few months ago, city council suspended the provision of basic services such as ambulance services and rubbish collection. But residents say their own incomes have not grown. Pensioner Ray Dube weighs in.
Okay, city council has hiked its rates and services by something like 700%. For example, I used to pay $9 metered water. Now, $81 a month. And unfortunately, city council itself has actually notified residents that it has no fuel to come and read thermometers. So they estimate the amount of consumption and then put a figure when perhaps that should have made static, in the sense that they haven't actually checked the meters.
Dube says that while he knows inflation is not the council's fault, the higher rates are unfair for most residents.
While they go by the rate of inflation of 500%, that does not include our salaries for people, for the workers who haven't received that cushion to cushion them.
Last week, a 10-kg bag of unsubsidized mealie-meal went up to $230 from about $180. A 2-liter bottle of cooking oil now costs $84 from about $78. Bernard Kanga, a fruit and vegetable vendor, says his business feels the pressure of the higher prices.
So you sell your wares in the morning, in the afternoon you cannot replace them. Look here, tomatoes, a box, we're selling them at less than 80 bond, barely a month ago. Now they're going for 200, 250. Trade is certainly going down. Tomatoes are getting rotten.
Kanda says the government should return to the old multi-currency system, which had allowed him and his customers to store value. Reporting for VOA, this is Ade Gondo.
That's it for this Wednesday, March 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.